All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So I want to focus tonight. We dedicated to Hanukkah. So Meretz Hashem, this evening, I'd like to focus a little bit on the parsha, and I'd like to focus on a part of the story that, although we're all familiar with, I think very often is neglected in terms of a deeper understanding. Let's take a look at number one. So the parsha begins, again, the great part about these parshas is that we are intimately familiar with all of the storylines and details. So the Torah says as follows, Vahimi kitsh nasayim yomim. And it was at the end of 2 years, Uparo cholim chalom. Paro is having a dream. Vine omeit alayor. And when Paro is having a dream, he's standing by the banks of the Nile River. Vine min hayor olos sheva paros yifos mara ubrios basar vatir enabahu. And in Paro's dream, what people dream about all kinds of things. Paro apparently dreams about cows. Right? So what does he see on the banks of the river? He sees again two very healthy, large-looking cows. Vatir ena ba'achu, they pastured on the marshland. Vine sheva paros acheros olos achareen. Seven more cows came up after the first seven. Min hayor. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. Is that what you were looking for? The shir tonight is dedicated by Mr. and Mrs. Robert and Delia Ben in honor of the yard sites of their parents, Avram Ben Sinai, and Helen Brown, Chanalea Bas Alter Yaakov. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamos will have an aliyah and the family a Nechama. So with that, to resume. So Paro dreams about the cows. In the first part of the dream, again, he sees the seven healthy, large cows come out of the river and are pasturing on the marshland. Afterwards, I'm in number one, Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. V'hine sheva paros acheros olos achare min ayor, ro'os mare v'dakos basar. Seven more cows emerge. These cows, thin, emaciated, and the second emaciated, skinny, unhealthy cows are standing next to the larger, healthier looking cows. What happens? So the skinny, emaciated cows go ahead and swallow up the larger cows. Paro has this dream, Vayikatz. Vayikatz, by the way, doesn't just mean that he woke up, but rather it means what? He woke up with a start. He was startled. There was something about, although this dream doesn't sound all that startling, he was startled. He was startled. Next dream. Vayishan Vayachalom Shenis. I'm in number one, Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Vayishan Vayachalom Shenis. There's a second dream. And what does he see in the second dream? Vihine Sheva Shibalim Olos Bekana Echad Brios Vitovos. In this second dream, there were seven ears of grain growing on one stalk, healthy and good. Vihine Sheva Shibalim Dakos Ushtavos Kadim Sumchos Acharen. Vativlano Hashibolim Hadakos. Ace Sheva Shibolim Habrios. Vahamaleos Vaikats Parovine Chalom. And again, a similar dream. Seven, what we'll call, what's the word over here? Thin ears of grain. There are thin ears of grain, thin, beaten by the east wind, and they swallowed up the healthier ears of grain. This was Paro's dream. What happens? Vayikatz Paro. Paro wakes up now a second time. Vihine chalom. And this was the end of his dreaming for that night. Vayhi baboker was in the morning. Vati pa'im rucho. Paro was greatly disturbed. Vayishtach vayikra es kol chartumei mitzrayim es kol chachamel. He calls all of the magicians, all of the wise men of Egypt. Vayisaper Paro lohem es chalomo. Ve'ein poser osam leparo. Paro is desperate for an interpretation. Paro is desperate for some explanation. But none of his wise men are able to go ahead and furnish it. So the part of the story that's not on the sheet over here is that, remember again, who emerges on the scene? None other than the butler. Right? The butler tells Paro, you know, I was in jail. I had a dream. Yosef, this guy interpreted my dream. Maybe we should get him here. Paro is desperate. Sends for Yosef. He gets him out of the pit, gets him out of jail, takes a shave, a hair, cut, puts on normal clothing, comes before the king. That picks up with number two. Pasuk says, "Vayom Yosef fal Paro." Yosef says, "Paro, chalom Paro echatu." The truth is, Paro, you haven't had two dreams. but rather, again, both of your dreams are in fact one comprehensive dream. God is telling you through his dream, through this dream, God is telling you what his intentions are. God is revealing his future plans to you through the mechanism of this dream. Sheva, and again, Yosef now goes on to explain. Sheva paros atovos, sheva shanim hema, v'sheva shibolim atovos, sheva shanim hema, chalom echatu, the seven healthy cows, the seven healthy ears of grain, those represent 7 years of plenty. 7 years of surplus. 7 years of abundance. V'sheva paros harakos, v'haraos ha'olos achareyan, sheva shanim heim, v'sheva shibolim harekos, shtufos hakadim yu sheva shnei harav. And the seven lean emaciated cows, the seven lean and emaciated stalks of grain, those represent 7 years of famine. So first thing Yosef does is he tells Paro it's not two dreams. Meaning, it's two dreams, but it's two dreams ultimately foreshadowing the same event. 7 years of plenty to be followed by 7 years of famine. So that explains large cows, large grain, small cows, or emaciated cows, emaciated grain. What doesn't it explain? It doesn't explain why the emaciated cows swallow up the large cows, and why ultimately, again, the large stalks swallow up the smaller stalks. So ultimately, again, so Yosef says, this is in number 2, verse 30, Pasuk Lamed, V'kamu shava shnei rav acharein v'nishkach kol asor v'erez Yisrael. The famine is going to be so intense that what is going to happen is going to wipe out any memory of the years of plenty. Although during the years of plenty there will be so much surplus, so much abundance, ultimately, again, it will totally be forgotten in the years of famine. Valishanos achalom aparo. And ultimately, again, why is it that God gave me, if it's the same dream, so just do one or the other, just do cows or just do stalks. So ultimately, again, why two dreams? To which Yosef explains, the repetition of the dream is to tell you that A, this is the truth, and B, it's going to happen quickly. So Yosef essentially interprets three different parts of Paro's dreams. Number one, the large cows, large stalks, the healthy ones represent ultimately, again, years of plenty. The emaciated, thin ones represent ultimately years of famine. That's number one. Number two, the healthy ones swallow up the emaciated ones swallow up the healthy ones. The message there, the famine is going to be so intense that any plenty, any surplus, anything that was good is going to be forgotten during the years of famine. And number three, why the repetition of the dream? Ultimately highlighting the idea that it is all going to occur very quickly. Yosef then goes on and does something very interesting. He gives Paro what appears to be an unsolicited piece of advice. Remember again, why was Yosef called? What's Yosef's job? Interpret the dream. Something very interesting happens over here. If you look at number 2, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, verse 33. Va'ata, yerei paro ish navon v'chacham v'shisil eretz Mitzrayim, yaseh paro v'yafkei pekudim al eretz v'chimesh es eretz Mitzrayim v'shav shnei arav. Then Yosef goes on to give a suggestion. You should really identify a very wise man who essentially could kind of become the CFO of Egypt. Let him control the stockpiles of grain, let him accumulate the grain, and that way again he could prepare the country for massive regional famine. Paro doesn't ask Yosef for this, he just asks Yosef for interpretation. Yosef himself comes along and provides this suggestion to Paro. And of course, you know how the story ends. Paro says, there's no one better than you, you're the guy for the job, and Yosef experiences a meteoric rise to greatness. Literally going from jail to being the viceroy, the second in command of Egypt. So we have to ask a very interesting question, which is, how did Yosef know how to interpret this dream? Right? Meaning, where did Yosef get this ability to interpret this dream for Paro? So there are a couple of different approaches in the commentaries. If you look at Rashi, so Rashi says very simply, Rashi and his grandson, the Rashbam, pretty much say the same thing. That if you remember again, when Yosef first appears before Paro, and Paro says, I had this dream, will you interpret it? So Yosef says, essentially, it's God who interprets dreams. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi number 3 says, Yosef was saying to Paro, Ein ha-chochma mishali. The wisdom to interpret dreams does not come from me, rather Elokim ya'aneh. It is God who ultimately, again, will answer your problems, Paro. Yitein aniya b'fi l'shalom Paro. God will place the answer, the interpretation of your dream into my mouth. The Rashbam says in number 4, Biladai, Eino talui bi. Yosef says, your interpretation of your dream is not dependent on me. Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yodienu Liftar Chalomecha. God will give me the explanation to interpret your dreams. Or in other words, what was Yosef saying to Paro? I don't really have any independent ability to interpret dreams. My ability to interpret dreams is from where? It's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's from God. So whether Yosef was saying this was a form of prophecy, a form of nevuah, a form of ruach hakodesh, some type of heightened level of understanding, but Yosef is clearly saying, don't think that I have some deeper ability to intuitively understand the deeper meaning of dreams. I don't possess any special personalistic powers, but my ability to go ahead and interpret your dream is because God places the interpretation explanation in my mouth, on my lips, and that is what I share with you. But I'll share with you something very interesting. So the Medrash has a little bit of a different approach, which I'm not going to get into now. So if you notice over here, the Psukim point out that Paro's first stop for dream interpretation was who? First stop. His magicians, right? If you look at the end of source number one, so the pasuk says, "Vayisaper Paro lahem," right? "Vayikra al kol chartumim Mitzrayim v'eskol chachamel." He called all of the sorcerers, necromancers is the wording that's used over here. All the sorcerers, all the magicians of Egypt, all the wise men of Egypt. "Vayisaper Paro lahem eschalamo." Paro told them the dream. "Ve'ein poser osam leparo." Now, the "ein poser osam leparo" sounds like what? They had no interpretation to offer. They were just clueless. But when one looks at the Medrash, we begin to see that that in fact is not the case. In fact, again, they gave interpretations. What interpretations did they give? Take a look at number 8. So for example, the Medrash writes, Vayikra al kol chal tumei Mitzrayim. Poschen hayu. The Medrash says the magicians, or the magicians of Paro, the wise men of Paro, did give interpretations. What were their interpretations? He says, Kira, listen to this. Skip a little bit. Maha Yuposrin, number 8, middle of the second line. Who Maha Yuposrin? What did the wise men and magicians try to tell Paro his dream was about? Sheva Paros Hatovos, the 7 large cows. Sheva Bonos, who molded. 7 daughters. 7 big cows represent 7 daughters. Okay, Sheva Paros Haros, so what about the 7 thin emaciated cows? Sheva Bonos Hukover. So, unfortunately, the way the Chartumim explained this was, the cows which represent vitality, which represent wealth, which represent, you know, again, blessing for the household. So the 7 large cows represent the fact that Paro will be blessed with 7 daughters. The 7 emaciated cows, and the fact that the 7 emaciated cows swallowed up the 7 large cows, they thought that symbolized that Paro's daughters would die. He would have 7 children, 7 daughters specifically. He would lose 7 daughters. Sheva Hashibalim, that's the cows. What about the stalks of grain? Sheva Hashibalim Atovos, what about the 7 stalks of grain? Sheva Aparchios Atakovish, the 7 healthy stalks of grain. That's a metaphor for ultimately the 7 kingdoms that you are going to conquer. So it represents the Paro's expanding power. Paro's expanding powers. You are going to go ahead and conquer 7 more kingdoms. Sheva Shibalim Haros. What about the 7 thin emaciated stalks? Sheva Aparchios Moredesbach. There will be 7 kingdoms who will rebel against you. So says the Medrash, the Chartumim did give an explanation. They did give an interpretation. The cows is a reference to children. 7 healthy cows, 7 healthy daughters. 7 emaciated cows, right, means the 7 daughters are going to die. They'll be swallowed up again. They're going to die. 7 healthy stalks, you're going to expand your kingdom by conquering 7 more empires. 7 emaciated stalks, ultimately, again, there will be 7 other kingdoms which will rebel against you. So they offer their interpretation, but Paro doesn't like it. Why doesn't Paro like it? So if you look at the Rashbam says, "Ein poser osam, dvarim hamisyashvim leparo." So what the Rashbam explains is, you know, for Paro, I guess for lack of a better term, he just wasn't feeling it. He just wasn't feeling it. You know, sometimes when someone gives you an explanation, it sits well with you, and sometimes it doesn't. Paro heard what they were saying, and the truth is, you could understand why they would interpret the dream in that particular way, but it didn't feel right to Paro. There was another issue. Look at number 9, the Chizkuni. Ve'in posera sama chalomos, sevurim hayushne chalomosein. You see, Paro in his heart knew that although there were two dreams, he understood that there were two dreams with the same message. How did he know this? Number one, because they pretty much have the same, it's the same dream. Something healthy being followed by something emaciated and sickly, and the sickly emaciated item swallowing up the healthy item. So although one dream is with cows and one dream is with stalks, Paro deep down knows that it's the same dream. It's the same dream. So in the Chartumim, when the magicians try to interpret it as two different dreams, it just doesn't sit with Paro. He just doesn't feel it. And therefore, ultimately, again, although they try to advance this interpretation, Paro just is not buying it. He's just not feeling it. Now, if you look at number 10, I want to share with you an incredible piece by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Now, this is a little bit of a longer piece, and the truth is I can't do the Rebbe's words justice outside, so we're going to do a lot of it inside. And the Rebbe asks a very interesting question. He says, take a look at number 10. So this is from the Kutei Sichos, Lubavitcher Rebbe. He says, Sipur Zeh, paragraph Aleph. Sipur Zeh, we're not going to do all of this inside, but we'll do a couple of paragraphs inside. Sipur Zeh, Doresh Ma'at Be'er. So the Rebbe says, this story really requires some explanation. Kame Babat Shtachi, Chalomo Shaparo, Mazmin Me'atzmo Pitaron Kimo Zeh Yosei Pasar. So the Rebbe asks an amazing question. He says, I don't understand why Yosef is getting such credit for interpreting this dream. In fact, the Rebbe posits that what? Yosef's interpretation is actually pretty straightforward. Right? Meaning, if you think about this, if someone were to tell you, I've had a dream, I'm the ruler of a country, right? I'm the most powerful man in the civilized world, and I've had a dream about fat cows, fat grain, lean grain. So ultimately, again, says the Rebbe, it's not a reach. And remember again, if there's one thing that is constantly experienced in the Middle East region, it is famine. Remember again, Avram Avinu gets to Eretz Kinan, right? Parshas Lech Lecha. He arrives in Eretz Kinan. And what's the first thing that occurs when he gets to Eretz Kinan? Vahi Ra'av Ba'aretz. There's always famine. Remember again, this is what happens when you live in an area that is arid, right? This is what happens when you live in an area that does not have consistent rainfall. There are good years and there are bad years. And more often the years are difficult than they are filled with plenty of produce. Now granted, Egypt is a little bit different because Egypt has the Nile. So the Nile, of course, was a great form of sustenance for Egypt. But regionally, there were famines happening all the time. Slavavitcher, I was so taken by this because he asked such a different kind of question. He says, Yosef's interpretation is obvious. Yosef's interpretation is obvious. In fact, he posits, one doesn't have to be a prophet to understand the message that God was trying to convey to Paro. There are going to be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. The 7 years of famine will be so intense that literally the preceding years of plenty will be forgotten. That is ultimately shown by how? By the sickly, emaciated items swallowing up the healthy, larger items. Says the Rebbe, it's obvious. So this leads Lubavitcher to ask a different question, which is, take a look at paragraph Dalet. Kacha she'ila hikfula. Ma'ichach masa miyuchedah shel Yosef she'paro yispal mera. So therefore, this leads us to a double question. Question number one is, if Yosef's interpretation is so obvious, why is Paro so blown away by it? Right? Again, I know this sounds like a strange question because we're used to seeing like the wonder. Yosef interpreted dreams last week's parasha. He interprets dreams this week's parasha. So we always assume that the dream interpretation is a function of some type of prophetic prowess, some type of prophetic power. But the Rebbe says, maybe it's just Yosef taking an objective look at this repetitive dream and understanding that God is sending him a message. It's obvious, says the Rebbe. If that's the case, why is Paro so blown away by Yosef? Remember again, you have to understand the enormity of what unfolds over here. Paro takes a Jewish slave, a Hebrew slave, and he essentially hands him the keys to the kingdom. He hands him the keys to the kingdom. Why does he hand him the keys to the kingdom? His good looks, winning personality, right? Sharp smile? No. Because of his dream interpretation. all because of his dream interpretation. Paro's so blown away by this that literally, again, he's willing to yield certain power and authority to Yosef. What's so mind-blowing about the dream interpretation that he's willing to yield the power? But then the Rebbe asks a follow-up question, paragraph Dalet. Madua hachartumim v'chachmi mitzrayim lo pasru es chalamo shal paro ba'ofen zeh. Madua pisronam nasav saviv shevabano shuhu molich v'shevabano sukoriv kover. So this is amazing. So the Rebbe says that the second question is, why couldn't the Chartumim come up with this? Right? Again, the Rebbe's entire approach to this is that Yosef's interpretation is blatantly obvious. It's clear. If it's blatantly obvious, then A, why can't the magicians and the wise men of Paro come up with it? And number two, why is Paro so blown away by Yosef's interpretation? If you skip down to paragraph Zion, so the Rebbe explains, and this is amazing. Ha-hezberu, kam chartumi mitzrayim hevinu shat muna haklalis shalachalom, movila lepisron shehetzig Yosef. So the truth is, the Rebbe suggests something incredibly novel. The Chartumim understood the dream as Yosef did. That's the truth. They understood it in the same way. Seven large, healthy cows, 7 years of plenty, seven emaciated cows, 7 years of famine. They understood it exactly the same way. Well, if they understood it the same way, then what's the question? Then why didn't they provide that interpretation? So look what the Rebbe says. Paragraph Ches. He goes on. He says, "Gam heim evinu shesheva paros abrios elish nos sova v'sheva paros haraos elish nos rav." They understood that the seven healthy cows were years of plenty. The seven lean cows were years of famine. Ach paro cholam gam es haprat haba. But says the Rebbe something amazing. There was a detail in Paro's dream that threw them. What was the detail in Paro's dream that threw them? Vihine, because watch this. Remember, the first part of the dream is the seven healthy cows are pasturing, right? They're eating in the pasture. What's the next part? Vihine sheva paros acheros olos achar minayar. So the seven healthy cows are minding their own business, pasturing. They're minding their own business. Seven other cows come up from the water behind them. Ra'os marevedakos basar, emaciated lean. Vata'amodna, eitzel haparos al sfas hayar. I should have underlined that line. The second to last line in paragraph Ches. Vata'amodna, eitzel haparos al sfas hayar. So what's the image? What's the image? The healthy cows are grazing by the pasture and by the river. The unhealthy, the lean, emaciated cows come up from the river. And what do they do? What do they do? The first thing they do. Before they eat the other ones, there's something very important that happens, which is what? They stand next to the healthy cows. Vata'amodna eitzel haparos asfas hayar. So the lean cows don't immediately just come up and devour the healthy cows, but they stand next to the healthy cows for some amount of time. Paragraph Tess. Maha perush ata'amodna eitzel haparos. Eichin omdos liyadon besmichas alein eitzel haparos. I'm reading paragraph here, then I'll translate. Sheva shanim ra'os ba'os rak acharei siyum sheva shanim atovos. V'lo eitzel haparos. So the Rebbe says something amazing. What does it mean in the dream when you see the seven emaciated cows standing next to the seven healthy cows? What's the message that's conveyed? Simultaneity. Simultaneity. Two events occurring at the same time. So the Chartumim, the magicians, get totally confused because they say to themselves at first glance, seven healthy cows mean years of plenty. Seven unhealthy, lean, emaciated cows means 7 years of famine. I got it. First there's 7 years of plenty, then there's 7 years of famine. And had the dream been that the seven emaciated cows came up, and what? And what? Just immediately swallowed up the seven cows, we're good. What they were confused by is the simultaneity. That there is this period of time that the unhealthy cows, the emaciated cows, are standing right next to the healthy cows. The eitzel. What does that mean? How can you have those two states at once? Either it's years of plenty or it's years of famine. You can't have years of plenty and years of famine at the same time. You can't have those two experiences unfolding simultaneously. It doesn't make sense. It's either surplus or it's famine. If it's surplus, it's not famine. If it's famine, it's not surplus. So they were good with the dream until that one word, or until that one detail. Vata'amodna eitzel haparos. And because of this, they are forced to abandon the initial interpretation and instead go with the interpretation as we saw it in the Medrash, the seven daughters, the seven kingdoms. What does Yosef do with this? Look at paragraph Yud Beis. Yosef lu'umasam nishar ha'pitaron ha'agyoni Yosef. So Yosef, on the other hand, says that no. Yosef says, I still stick with the original interpretation. The original interpretation, which is 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. What about the fact? What about vata'amodna itzel haparos? How do you understand the simultaneity of the healthy cows and the lean cows? So watch this. So remember again, what does Yosef do immediately after he interprets the dream? What does he do? What do most Jews do? Give advice, right? So Yosef goes there and Yosef gives advice. And what's his advice? You gotta find a guy. You need a guy who's capable, divide the land up into regions, into quadrants, start amassing wheat. So again, why is Yosef giving unsolicited advice to the most powerful man in the world, in the civilized world? Remember again, Paro could snap his fingers and Yosef is done. Yosef is done. Paro asked you for something specific. He asked you for a dream interpretation. He didn't ask you for advice how to run his kingdom. Why are you being so, what's the right word? Brazen. Right? Why are you being so brazen? And ultimately, again, giving this advice. And the Rebbe says something amazing. Yosef was explaining the simultaneity. He says, you can't have famine even during years of plenty. How? Because during those years of plenty, someone is going to be in charge of collecting excess grain, putting it in silos to prepare for what? Famine. To prepare for famine. That, says Yosef, is the simultaneity of experiences. While the healthy cows are standing here, the emaciated cows before they saw them up are standing here also, which Yosef understood to mean that during the good years, you have to prepare for the bad years. During the years of plenty, you have to prepare ultimately again for the years, for during the years of surplus, you have to prepare for the years of famine, and vice versa. Remember again, the large healthy cows were standing next to the emaciated cows, teaching us what? That if you prepare correctly, then even during the years of the emaciated cows, you will what? You will what? Still be able to reap the benefits of the large healthy cows. Yosef was not giving unsolicited advice. This was all part of the dream interpretation, says the Rebbe. Yosef understood, because Yosef saw, he heard what the Chartum mean. Because if Pepashos, if you're Yosef, you're going to say to yourself, you know what, if I'm being brought in, that means Paro must have consulted all of his guys. I'm just curious, what did you guys have to say? Right, and he hears about the daughters, and he hears about the kingdoms, and he says, no, you're getting thrown off by one word. You are abandoning the true interpretation of this dream because you don't know how to understand the simultaneity of the large cows and the thin cows coexisting at the same time. It's either years of plenty or it's years of famine. To which Yosef says it's not true. They both exist at the same time. During the years of famine, you actively prepare for the years of the thin emaciated cow. During the years of plenty, you prepare for the years of famine. And during the years of famine, ultimately again, you reap the benefits of the years of plenty. That's why there was that stage in Paro's dream where both sets of cows were standing next to each other. The simultaneity of experience. Take a look at Yud Zayin. Midavarzeh Paro hispoel v'hisrashim. And this is why Paro was blown away by Yosef's interpretation. V'amar ein navon v'chacham kamocha. There is no one wiser than you, Yosef. What does this mean? Lo me etzem pitaron achalom, ela be'ikar mehatzas havana vehezber keitzat shnos harav uvasova omdos yachad, zu litzad zu, velo zu la'achar zu. So what Paro was most impressed by was Yosef's ability to live in two different time frames simultaneously. We're going to explain what this means in just a moment. But Paro, the fact that the large cows were years of plenty and the lean cows were years of famine, that's kind of intuitive. What Paro was most impressed by was Yosef's ability to interpret the phrase Vata'amodna Eitzel Vata'amodna. What was the lashon? I'm sorry. Vata'amodna Eitzel Haparos. That the lean cows coexisted simultaneously with the large cows. That is what Paro was most impressed by a person who could live in two different states of being simultaneously. We're going to see what this means in a moment. About a person who could live in famine and in surplus at the same time. A person who could envision and live a life of the healthy cows and the emaciated cows standing side by side. What does this mean? Skip down a little bit to paragraph Yutes. So the Rebbe says something amazing. So remember again, Yosef's successful interpretation of the dream, as we said before, leads to his appointment as the viceroy of Egypt. And remember again, that appointment in and of itself unleashes a whole dynamic of activities. Ultimately, the family of Yaakov Inu is reunited. Yaakov and his sons resettle to Eretz Goshen, to Mitzrayim. And of course, again, within just a few parshos, we already have the beginning of Egyptian servitude, of Egyptian diaspora. So the Rebbe makes an amazing observation. Paragraph Yotes. He says, Golos nimshalas l'chalom. You know, if we notice again, Golos, diaspora, is compared to a dream. Where do we see that? Shira malos b'shuv ha-shemesh shiva sion hayinu kichomim. So remember again, the way that this pasuk is to be understood, that when Hashem returns us back to Tzion, Mashiach comes, hayinu kichomim, our galus, our thousands of years of dispersion and diaspora, will be like a dream. What does it mean to be like a dream? And it makes an amazing observation. Paragraph Yud Tes, second line. Beis Hashena, Yadam yachol lachlom ashnei afachim biyachad. This is amazing. You know, in a dream, a person could dream about two opposite realities simultaneously. Right? Dreams are not bound by the constructs of our reality. In a dream, a person could experience two opposite things at the same time. Kach gam zman ha-galus. And the same thing happens during galus. Adam chay ba b'shnei afachim gam yachad. A person could live in two opposite states simultaneously. Mechad hu yachal la'asok ba'olam shel kedusha. Toru tfila. U'bamakbil lazeh hu gam tarut ba'asakav. So the Rebbe says something amazing. Don't we all live in two polar opposite realities simultaneously? We want to be holy spiritual people, yet we must be a part of the everyday mundane world. The truth is, this two different opposite simultaneous states occurs within us, ourselves. I have a body which is physical and very much confined to the realities of this world. And I have a soul which is limitless and has boundless potential. Human beings live in different polar opposite states simultaneously. And the job of a person, the job of a human being, the job of a Jew, is to manage those opposite states and never lose myself to one over the other. If a person only pays attention to his soul and neglects his body, he dies. If a person only pays attention to his body but neglects his soul, then he's spiritually deficient and stunted. He goes on, paragraph Chaf Aleph. Ma'aloso shel Yosef hi, shek bikocho hu roa keitzad efshar liftar es hachalom, ולישב יחד גם שני סוגי הפרות זו לצד זו. דרגוסו הרוחני של יוסף, הינו כל גבוה ונעלס. So let me tell you the rest of this outside, because I think there's something incredible that the Rebbe is highlighting over here. So first of all, the Rebbe provides us what I think is a very riveting interpretation of Yosef's dream prowess, of his dream interpretation prowess. That Yosef, again, it's quite possible that he didn't interpret this with Nevuah. He understood it intuitively. What threw everyone else? What threw everyone else? One word. What one word? Eitzel. The word Eitzel, the simultaneity of the fat cows and the thin cows together threw Yosef. It threw the Chartum, it threw everyone off. Yosef said, why is everybody getting thrown by that? At the end of the day, the simultaneity is part of the experience. During the years of plenty, the healthy cows, you have to prepare for the emaciated cows. During the years of the emaciated cows, you reap the benefit of the years of the healthy cows. But the Rebbe takes this a step further. What Yosef was teaching Paro, which is what Paro was so blown away by, is how to live in two opposite states simultaneously. And the Rebbe says this becomes a paradigm not just for Paro, but this becomes a paradigm for us as well. Yosef figured out how to live in famine and plenty at the same time. What does that mean? So I think what the Rebbe tried to teach us is as follows. If you ask a person, how is life? How is life? You know, some people you don't ask that question to because they actually give you a real answer. And it's going to be like 10 minutes with every single thing that's problematic. But as you ask yourself the question, how's life? How would you answer the question, how's life? Right? Baruch Hashem. That's always a safe one, right? Baruch Hashem. Can't go wrong with that. For most of us, hopefully, life is good. Life is good. Maybe sometimes life is great. But one thing is clear, that even when you say life is good and life is great, it doesn't mean everything is good, and it doesn't mean everything is great. Just like in one of those weak moments when I feel like life is terrible, that's not a true statement either. Life is never only terrible. There might be some terrible things going on, but during those time of terrible things, there are also incredible brachos that are unfolding. Life is this incredible dialectic between the healthy cows and the emaciated cows. Life is this incredible dialectic between years of plenty and years of famine. And the truth is, more often than not, it's not one or the other. It's a combination of both. It's a combination of both. It's vata'amodna eitzel. Most of us live eitzel lives. There are hopefully incredible things that are unfolding in my life, but at the same time, again, there might be some significant challenges that are there. And the great stuff doesn't drown out the challenges, and the challenges hopefully don't drown out the great stuff. I have some stuff in my life that's the healthy cows. I have some stuff in my life that's the emaciated cows. Life is never one state. It's never, you know what, my life, I'm a healthy cow life kind of guy, right? Everything in my life is healthy cows. I don't know anyone who has a life like that. Conversely, no one has an all emaciated cow life either. It's always this etel. It's always this balance. And what did Yosef teach everyone? Yosef taught everyone how to achieve that balance of simultaneity. Because the great challenge of life is that when you have emaciated cows, not to let that color the entirety of your existence. Your emaciated cows cannot be the defining quality of your life. Because if all you do is define your life by your emaciated, broken cows, then you forget about all of your brachos. On the flip side, if you only focus on your healthy zavdig cows, then what happens? And you ignore your problems. Ignoring your problems is not good either. Because if you ignore your problems, you're never going to be able to address them or to fix them. Yosef said, guys, you're all getting thrown off because you think it has to be either healthy cows or emaciated cows. But it's not true. Life is that dialectic. Life is that balance. We all have a little bit or a lot of both. And the goal in life is to maintain healthy, balanced perspective between my healthy cows and between my emaciated cows. I'm going to give you an example of this. If you take a look at number 11, this is an amazing Gemara. The Gemara says, actually, totally unrelated to Yosef, but you'll see the dynamic. Tan Rabbanan, Kishacharav Abayis Bishniya. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed the second time, Rabu Prushim Yayin. So there was a group of people called the Prushim. And the Prushim decided that we're not going to eat meat, we're not going to drink wine. We're going to avoid all of this stuff. Right? Why? You know why? Right? Why? Because ultimately, again, out of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Out of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. There's no karbanos on the Mizbeach. We're not going to eat meat and drink wine either. So if you skip down a little bit. So again, the rabbis begin getting into a discussion with these particular people. So take a look. I'm sorry. Actually, let's read it. So what happens? Rabbi Yeshua says to them, "Bonai, mipnei miatem ochlin baser viatem shosin yayin." So he says, "My children, why are you not eating meat and drinking wine?" So they respond, "How could we eat meat when there are no karbanos? How can we drink wine when there is no libations?" So Rabbi Yeshua says to them, well, if that's the case, then you shouldn't eat bread either, right? Because there's no mincha offerings, there's no meal offerings, no lechem upon him. They said, fine, you're right. We won't go ahead and eat bread, we'll eat fruit. Tish Rabbi Yeshua says, well, you can't eat fruit either. Why? Because in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, there's no bikurim, no first fruits. You shouldn't be able to have any kind of fruit. So what happens? They say, fine, we'll eat non-bikurim fruit. Remember again, you only bring bikurim from the seven species. Shivas Aminim. We'll eat apples, oranges, other fruit. Mayim lo nishteh. So Rabbi Yeshua says, you know, by the way, you shouldn't drink water either. Right? Why? Because water was used for the nisach mayim, the water libation on Sukkis. Again, if you're in such money for the Beis HaMikdash, you shouldn't drink water either. Shasku. So ultimately, again, they're quiet. Amar lahem. So actually, it's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to them, Banai. Bo va'omer lachem. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says something so profound to them. Shalom lehis abel kol ikar I efshar. To not mourn for that which has been lost is impossible. Shekvar nigzra gzera. Ulehis abel yoser midai. But to mourn too much is not healthy either. Shin goes in gzera el atzibah alim kim rabbi yochanan abo. Ela, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai goes ahead and hands down a series of decrees, right, that are aimed at mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. You want to build yourself a new home? Go build yourself a new home. But leave an amma by amma unfinished on your wall by your doorway. You want to prepare a lavish meal? Leave a little side dish off. The Kala gets married. She leaves off one of her adornments. What was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai trying to teach them? You see, what's happening in this Gemara is in the aftermath of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, there was a group of people who categorized their experience how? Skinny cows. Right? Skinny cow life. It's a skinny cow life. Life is bad. Life is terrible. Catastrophic, tragic. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, whoa, hold on a second. Are there skinny cows over here? Are there emaciated cows with difficulties? Absolutely. Is that the entirety of your existence? Absolutely not. Look out at the pasture. And grazing right there next to the emaciated cows are the healthy, larger cows as well. You have to bring a balanced perspective to life. You have to bring a balanced outlook to life. You have to maintain that proper dialectic of simultaneity. You have to go ahead and always be able to see the large cows, even when the skinny cows are there, and the skinny cows, even when the large cows are there. And this was the koach of Yosef. This balanced approach to life. The ability to not be overwhelmed by the difficulties, adversity, and sometimes even tragedy, to the point that you don't see your brachos, but at the same time, even in times of bracha, you don't forget about your challenges. You know, in just a little bit later on in the parasha, Yosef gets married. He marries a wonderful young lady by the name of Asnas, and they have children, right? And their first child is named Menashe. Where did he get the name Menashe from? Kinashani Elokim Eskalam Ali Veskal Beis Avi. God allowed me to forget all of the suffering of my father and his household. Which automatically tells you what? That Yosef did not forget the suffering of his father and his household. Because remember again, if he would have forgotten it, then he would not have named a son representing that pain and difficulty of the past. Sometimes people say, this happens all of the time. It happens sometimes even in relationships, right? Of course I forgive you. Of course I forgive you. When do I forgive you? Until, I know no one here knows the answer to this, right? But I forgive you until the next time you do something wrong. And then, by the way, I will remind you of every past misdeed, alphabetical order, chronological order, severity order. I've got it all up here. Perfect. But you told me that you forgave me. Right? You told me you forgot. Yeah, I forgave you and forgot for then. That allowed us, but it's here. Yosef never forgot. We see that. We see that by his encounter with his brothers. He never forgets. Those cows, those emaciated cows of trauma, of adversity, of abuse by his family, he never got rid of those cows. Those cows were important because those cows shaped him as a human being. Those cows shaped the way he treated his brothers when they were at his mercy. When they needed him, he didn't take advantage of his authority and mistreat them and abuse them. He nurtured them. He loved them. He sustained them. An entire family gave them a home, gave them a land, gave them an identity. Yosef, even when life was filled with big, healthy cows of bracha, kept the skinny cows of life adversity with him as well. And in the time of life adversity of skinny cows, during all of those years, in the house of Potiphar, in jail, with his brothers, he always had the vision of the large cows as well. There's so much bracha. There's so much good. And this becomes the lesson for us. You know, sometimes what we do in life is we all want to be happy. We all want to be happy. But we often assume that we'll only find true joy, true simcha, true bliss when everything falls into place. So there's good news and bad news. You don't have to wait to be happy. That's the good news. The bad news is nothing ever fully falls into place. And this is one of the most important realities to accept. Because sometimes in our mind's eye, we have this utopian image of life. And this, in so many areas, we have a utopian visualization of marriage. We have utopian visualization of what children should look like, of what a home should look like. Life doesn't work that way. Life doesn't work that way. With every set of healthy, wonderful bracha dika cows, there's also, again, the thin, scrawny, emaciated cows of life adversity. And so Yosef teaches us that if you're going to wait to be happy until everything falls into place, just healthy cows, and the emaciated cows are gone, you'll never be happy. Because that is not the way of the world. That is not the nature of the human condition. We live in a world of vata'amodna eitzel haparos. Life is filled with healthy, large cows of beautiful life blessing, which simultaneously stand right next to emaciated cows of life adversity. And very rarely in life do you have either or. More often in life you have both. And life, successful life, is all about maintaining the proper disposition, even when you have both sets of cows. If it's a time, ultimately again, of healthy cows, fantastic. Don't forget about the lean cows. Don't forget about the problems. Don't forget about the challenges, because those still have to be addressed. And if it's a time, ultimately, again, of lean cows, of emaciated cows, a time of difficulty and adversity, always remember that even in the midst of the greatest life adversity and difficulty, we still have brachos. We still have large cows. Life is about the ability to maintain the proper perspective of eitzel, the proper perspective of simultaneity. This is what Yosef taught Mitzrayim. This is what Yosef taught Paro. And ultimately, this is the great lesson that Yosef HaTzadik teaches us. We'll stop over here.
This morning, is it a practical halacha if you see somebody else's candles?